State and Federal Affairs to order Monday, August 1, 2005, a little after 4. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1089. And we have Representative Buckley and Mr. Christensen come up if they would.
Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Representative Peter Buckley, House District 5, just want to express my appreciation for your willingness to open a work session on Senate Bill 1089. I've submitted a written testimony, and we have worked with the Treasurer's Office on an amendment that you have before you, and we are in fully support of that amendment, and it's our strong hope that you'll be able to pass the bill.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, sir. For the record, my name is John Christensen. I serve as Chief of Staff for the President Pro Tem of the Senate, Senator Margaret Carter. And Senate Bill 1089 was introduced by Senator Carter. I'm here to let you know that Senator Carter is actually at a meeting of a subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means Committee, which is reconvening today, Capital Construction Subcommittee. Thank you.
Okay.
We did submit testimony.
I think I'm going to go ahead and have is there anything about the bill we need to know? Other than okay. Let her just speak to the bill in just a moment. And if there's any questions from the committee, we'll come back and ask you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1089, the original bill, would require the State Treasurer and the Oregon Investment Council to implement a two-phase divestiture program regarding investments in Sudan. The amendments that you have, the -3 amendments, require the Oregon Investment Council and the State Treasurer to act reasonably to try to ensure that funds are not invested in any company the Investment Council knows is doing business in Sudan for as long as the Sudanese government continues a campaign of human rights violations, atrocities, or genocide. There are the changes in the bill, I think, will be explained by in the -3 amendments, will be explained by the State Treasurer's Office, and they can compare it to you after their experience with the previous divestiture requirements that the state has had in the past. There is a fiscal impact statement for the original bill, and the bill does have a subsequent referral to the Budget Committee. It's my understanding, and the Treasurer's Office can speak to this too, that the amendments reduce the fiscal impact to them, and so there may not, the referral to the Budget Committee may not be needed. And the other thing I wanted to mention is there was a number of pieces of testimony at your place already today. One is from the Treasurer's Office, one from Senator Carter's office, and some background material also from Senator Carter's office.
Okay, thank you. Committee members, do you have any questions of these gentlemen?
Representative, I'll be very brief, but I would like to clarify. I had a chance to talk to the fiscal staff. As you know, Senator Carter serves on the Senate Budget Committee. The fiscal staff was unaware of the sanctions that have been on Sudan and on American companies since the 1990s. And right now, there are no American companies in Sudan. Actually, I was the beneficiary of that information from Representative Boquist, who provided me copies of the U.S. State Department sanctions briefing paper. Thank you. So, in reference to that, the information about transaction costs will be probably significantly less. The other factor is I was one of the individuals that negotiated with the State Treasurer, Bill Rutherford, and even at that time in 1987, there wasn't really a need for additional staff. I remember directly those conversations. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Further?
Will we be hearing from Treasurer Edwards?
Yes, she'll be coming up in a moment. Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Mr. Edwards, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randall Edwards, State Treasurer of Oregon. I want to thank the sponsors for really raising the consciousness of this issue to Oregonians. The government-sponsored genocide in Sudan is appalling. Genocide anywhere must be condemned, and we must do all that we can in the world to try to stop things like that. That's why I strongly support this policy goal behind Senate Bill 1089, to ensure that Oregon is doing all that it can to try to effect change in Sudan, not only by putting pressure on the companies doing business there, but also on its government. As you heard over the last few weeks, my office has been working hard with the sponsors to come up with amendments to achieve that policy goal, while in a balanced way to make sure that we're not changing or harming the fiduciary standards that I have, as well as the Oregon Investment have, towards the monies that we invest for other people. The Dash 3 amendments reflect that effort, and I want to thank again the sponsors and their staff for all the work that they have done to achieve this. As you know, Oregon has a long-standing tradition of careful and productive investment of funds, which now total more than $60 billion. This tradition has resulted in our state having a stellar reputation nationally and widely envied returns. Much of that success is due to the autonomy that the Treasurer and the Oregon Investment Council have to make investment decisions, which, again, as I described, are guided by fiduciary standards and have, for the most part, been unfettered by outside dictates and limitations. Thus, whenever the legislature introduced legislation that might impact how we manage money, it is incumbent that we all consider that as we look at the legislation. I'm supportive of the Dash 3 amendments. These amendments require that we work within the standards of care and prudence as well as productivity when considering any relevant investments we may have in companies operating in Sudan. I do have only one reservation about the amendment, and again, this may be a slight nuance, but in Section 5.1, and I have expressed this to the group that we've been working with, which addresses how the legislature approaches the council and my workings. Specifically, my preference, if I had one for this section, was to have the legislature urge us rather than direct the Oregon Investment Council and me to ensure that we are not investing in companies in Sudan. This is some language that other states have followed regarding Sudan, and in my view, better protects that fiduciary standard, which I must follow and has served Oregon well. Other than that, I got to say, I think the Dash 3 is a great example of working together with the sponsors and coming up with a good bill that, again, meets the policy objectives of the sponsors and I think for the state, which is an important statement for us to make. And I will do everything I can to uphold the spirit of this law. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any members have any questions? Representative Pearson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Treasurer Edwards, do we have the language that you're proposing here in an amendment form?
No, you do not.
And it looks to me, if I could follow up, Mr. Chair, the key difference is the introductory phrase, the Legislative Assembly urges. It looks to me like otherwise the text is essentially the same as it is there.
That's exactly.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I just I want to thank you for the policy that you have in place already. And I'm reluctant to, you know, direct the OIC because I think they have a high standard already. However, I do think it could be appropriate for the legislature to step in on some very important moral issue like this. But I certainly appreciate what you've told us today.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I just want to thank the Treasurer. I'm actually one of the co-sponsors of this, and I am, for the record, and I said this on the Senate side, not normally supportive of these types of activities. And I think it's admirable of the Treasurer to work together with this, and though he doesn't have a total 99% or 100% agreement with the Dash 3s, is supportive of the Dash 3s. And I testified again on this on the far side. And I guess that testimony over there was, you know, taken, you know, quite seriously because, you know, this is, of all the countries I've been in the past 30 years, this is probably the only one that I can remember, you know, laying down in 119-degree temperature while the gunships shelled us overhead. and we're in refugee camps. And so, I mean, it's a very serious issue. The Office of Foreign Asset Control presently enforces the Sudan Peace Act and several other pieces of legislation that have been in place for a while. And up until this morning, there was some considerable discussion about opening up access to Sudan for investment. But if you haven't seen, there's riots going on in Khartoum today, and they're a long ways from a peace agreement. And, you know, I have seen about 68,000 dead in one place in one day over there. So this is quite a serious issue, one that I normally would not be involved in, but and I'm leery of economic sanctions. But this is one place that, you know, if I've met a terrorist before, it's in Sudan.
Thank you very much. Anything further? Thank you, gentlemen. And lady, did you want to speak to this, too?
Chair Krieger and members of the committee, Kate Richards and Chief of Staff for State Treasurer Randall Edwards. I just wanted to address a couple comments from prior witnesses just to clarify for the record. The fiscal impact is significantly decreased by these Dash 3 amendments. It provides much more flexibility. The focus is on the our primary portfolio, and it would be significantly reduced. I will say that with the South Africa divestment, we did have two FTE that were specifically dedicated to that back then. But with the bill as this is crafted now, it provides enough flexibility and room for the Oregon Investment Council and Treasurer to maneuver to reduce that. As to the U.S. companies, that's true that they are prevented or prohibited from doing business directly there, but as you know, we're a global investment fund, and there are other companies outside the United States that this would address.
President Barker?
About foreign companies and so on, I know Halliburton was working in Iraq, but they weren't working the American company. It was a company that was in on one of the offshore islands. One of the TV networks went down, and they found out it was essentially a postage drop, mail drop. And if they got any mail, it would go to Texas. But so is it possible we're investing in companies that are not American that are that kind of a shell game?
Chair Krieger, Representative Barker, there is a definition of company here, and that is will be some of the investigation and evaluation of the Oregon Investment Council will have to go through with its legal counsel.
Thank you. And this was in Iraq prior to us sending the armed force there. Thank you.
Randall,
Mr. Chair,
in the back of the fiscal here where it talks about there was 200,000 and the 87-89 abandonment as an impact, was that because we were invested in Africa, not in the Sudan, basically?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I don't have that fiscal impact. Is that that's South Africa, correct?
It's based on that.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, if I could answer that. The fiscal I think you're looking at is to the original bill.
Yeah.
And that was based on one trying to find out whether we're invested in that. It's not clear.
Yeah.
There's clear list out there.
There's no fiscal that's determined, but back in 87-89, we're dealing with the other country, was it
correct.
South Africa, whatever it was.
Right.
But we had investments.
Yes,
now
we
don't here, so there shouldn't be.
Mr. Chair, actually, depending how you define the companies, we may very well have investments there. And just from a public information publicly available, for instance, there is some consensus that PetroChina would be a company that would qualify under this bill, and we do have some investment with PetroChina. So I would not testify that we do not have any investment there, but we need that would qualify under this bill, but that's part of the cost is determining whether we do or not.
Any questions?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Pearson.
Thank you. Ms. Richardson, my reading of the language in 5.1, in which it says the OIC and the Treasurer shall act reasonably and in a manner consistent with, and then there's a reference to the statutes on the objective of investments and the standard of care, which is generally the prudent person standard by the way I would characterize it on a quick scan.
is that in effect what this is telling the OIC and the Treasurer to do is to be prudent, and so that in effect that's the standard through which this bill operates, so that this isn't telling the Treasurer or the OIC to do anything different than the general standard it applies, other than to be mindful about what's going on in Sudan, because in fact that could impair the investment quality of the things that are being invested in. And it seems to me that's the kind of the connection that we need to see, is that when we have rogue regimes behaving in ways that are just generally outrageous to the sort of the worldwide conscience, that it is a bad investment to be invested there, as well as morally troublesome. And it's that, connection to me that makes this a good thing to go forward to do. Any reactions to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative McPherson, this is why this is not our first choice, but it is our second choice for language here, because we do believe that with those prudent and productivity standards, which are what we always invest in, that does provide that flexibility, that evaluation. I would say that we already operate under those. And so in all of our investments already, so should we already be invested there, that filter has already been considered.
Mm-hmm.
There are different interpretations, I suppose, of the prudent investor standard, but this would be what the investment council would take. Different people evaluate risk differently, and so in that regime, I think this is a statement by the legislature saying, per se, we find it would not be a prudent investment.
Mm-hmm.
Our concern for the language what the legislature urges that is just that it's a more clear statement that the legislature isn't narrowing the universe beyond what the council's already provided.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anything further? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A3 amendment into Senate Bill 1089.
Representative Boquist has moved the A3 amendment into Senate Bill 1089. Any objections?
Chair, excuse me, it's just the dash three. So we have the original bill.
Dash three amendment.
Dash three?
Not A3.
Okay, the dash three.
Three.
Mm-hmm. Any objections? The amendments are in.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move SB 1089 as amended with the dash three to the floor with a due pass and a rescind the referral to budget.
Representative Boquist has moved Senate Bill 1089 as amended to the floor with a due pass and a rescind the referral to budget. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, only to say I support the bill, and it's that support is based on the clarification that I just noted in my exchange with the witnesses just a moment ago.
Okay, call the roll, please.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Boquist?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Jeff
Regis. Aye. Senate Bill 1089, as amended, moves to the floor with a due pass, and I will have Representatives Buckley and Boquist co-carry. Thank you. Both works. We're going to drop down to Senate Bill 1098. Open a work session. Give us an explanation of the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1098 is a bill that restructures the statutes that authorize and direct how the Special Public Works Fund is administered. There are a number, about three or four major changes that the bill does, but otherwise it's a restructuring and making sure the cross references with other funds are correct. The bill does add two legislators to be ex officio members of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Commission, and the the representatives of the commission and the department are here to explain the several substantive changes to the bill. But again, it's mostly cleanup and updating of the statutes. You have the Senate vote, and you have a section by section that was provided by the department. There is no fiscal impact to the bill, and there were a number of statutes repealed, and we just made copies of those. But most of the repealed statutes are brought in new language in the bill. So, again, the department can explain what the substantive changes are.
We have one amendment.
And the Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, there is a dash two amendment to the bill. This bill, the amendment may look familiar. It's that the Port of Portland may not expend any money to finance transportation projects at the property in Troutdale that's formerly known as the Reynolds or the Alcoa Aluminum property if that capital improvements are intended to allow the use of the facility to be an intermodal transportation facility. Provision would sunset January 1st, 2012. This is similar to the amendment in Senate Bill 71, the Connect Oregon bill that you passed a couple of weeks ago. The date is different. The date
I understand the parties have agreed to this. Are you aware?
Mr. Chair, I'm not aware.
Okay. All right, I'd like to have John Rockowich and Gary Whitney come up, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Gary Whitney. I'm the Policy and Program Coordinator for the Economic and Community Development Department. It's a pleasure to be here and express the department's support for Senate Bill 1098. Primarily, this bill reorganizes and simplifies the statutes for the Special Public Works Fund program. The statutory authorities are largely unchanged. I can talk more about that in a minute if you like. If the bill also adds two non-voting seats to the Oregon Economic and Development Department, Oregon Economic and Development Commission, the strategy and policy-making body for the department. There'd be one member from the House and one member from the Senate appointed to the commission. If the committee likes, I can spend a little bit of time just giving a brief background on the Special Public Works Fund, why the bill is needed, and some highlights.
I would appreciate that.
Okay. The Special Public Works Fund is a revolving loan fund. It's currently valued at about $145 million. It was established by the legislature 20 years ago, and its focus remains job creation and economic development. The program provides financing to municipalities, which are cities, counties, many special districts, Oregon ports, and Oregon tribal governments. The financing can be used to plan, design, and build municipally owned infrastructure, which includes city and county owned roads, port and marine transportation facilities, municipally owned water, wastewater, and stormwater systems, community buildings, telecommunication facilities, and other infrastructure essential for economic and commercial activity. As I mentioned, the program is 20 years old. During that time, it's been revised and expanded. One result is that the statutes have become overly long and complex, and unfortunately, at times, open to differing interpretations. Senate Bill 1098 would greatly clarify the programmatic requirements. It will make it easier for municipal officials to use and make the program more responsive to their need and simpler for the department to administer. Some of the highlights in the bill can be categorized as streamlining measures. For example, currently there are two eligible construction project types. We'd like to combine that under a single umbrella definition for construction projects. And the same with our planning and technical assistance type projects. There's two eligible project types. We'd like to simplify that into a single project type. There's three revolving fund programs that are often used in conjunction, and we'd like to standardize the loan term lengths across those programs, again, making programs more simple for municipal officials. Some of the changes do change statutory authority, and I already mentioned one of those, and that is that two non-voting seats are added to the commission, one from the Senate, one from the House. Very importantly, we are adding, proposing to add airport districts organized under ORS 838 to the list of eligible applicants, which would mean that the state's sole and single airport district at this time would be able to come to this program to get low-cost financing for current and future infrastructure needs. And very importantly, will clarify the program's authority to fund early-stage planning projects. Oregon lacks an adequate supply of developmental industrial lands, in part because of the tremendous difficulties municipalities face in financing planning related to job growth and economic development. And this bill will help address that need and continue the state's tradition, a 20-year tradition of investing in its communities. That concludes the department's comments, and we'd be happy to respond to any questions you may have.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Rakowitz with the Economic and Community Development Department, and the only additional note I would make is that this rather lengthy bill was developed and is supported by a large number of people behind the stakeholders, both public and private partners that we work with these funds, and to my knowledge, everything in this bill is acceptable to everybody, and when you're trying to do something this complex, that's quite a feat, and we're really hopeful that we can manage to make this sort of change. It really is largely a streamlining measure to make it possible for us to work with our local partners.
Okay.
Happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair, will we be hearing from anybody else on this bill?
I do not believe so.
Okay, let me put a question then to these gentlemen, if I could. And maybe they can answer or not. It's actually the question that you had asked of staff, which is whether the Dash 2 amendments were agreed to by the Port of Portland.
Mr. Chair, Representative McPherson, we were aware in the last few days that there was going to be an amendment of this nature. We just saw the language when it got handed out here, and my understanding is, is that there is an agreement. I haven't really been a part of that process, but obviously if that's the will of the committee and the legislature, then we will implement it in that fashion. I was not a party to any negotiations or anything of that nature.
Mr. Armstrong, do you know have any information on that? Come forward, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Armstrong, representing the Oregon Ports Group. Port of Portland is a member of the Oregon Ports Group. I, too, was not actually part of the discussions, but it has been represented to me from both parties that were involved, which is Speaker Karen Minnis and Port of Portland Executive Director Bill Wyatt, that they talked and they found the terms that are represented in the Dash 2 amendments acceptable to both sides. So that's what I have been told, and I'm operating under that assumption for both the purposes of Senate Bill 1098 and Senate Bill 71.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the Dash 2 or 8. Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 1098.
I believe Bill Quist has moved the Dash 2 amendments into Senate Bill 1098. Any objections?
Mr. Chair, I won't object, but it's really based on my understanding that the Port is okay with that.
What I'm going to do next will probably give you some time to check.
Okay.
There you go. The amendments are in. We're not going to move the bill. We're going to close the work session on 1008. We may have another amendment.
Okay.
That will give you fellows a little time to breathe.
Great.
And I'm going to recess until 5 p.m. There's something I have to attend to, and we'll come back and pick up with 1096. Okay. Reopen the state and federal committee, State and Federal Committee of Affairs. We are not going to move or have a work session on 1096 until 11 a.m. tomorrow morning. So the committee will be adjourned.